Radio is about voices. And there is no doubt, when you heard Bob Bupka speak, it just grabbed you.
Three hole-in-ones in the last hour here at the par 3-16th. Just when you think you've seen it all.
His distinctive American tones enthralled and entertained TalkSport listeners for over 25 years. His love of the game of golf shone through, coupled with a cheeky, almost rebellious element, made it a delight to listen to.
Indeed, a voice unlike any other. Hello once again and welcome to Musings on Golf. My name is Kelly Elbin, and with those lovely words from Rupert Bell of TalkSport as the backdrop, I come to you today with a very heavy heart as my dear friend and co-host of Musings on Golf, Bob Bupka, passed away on July 19th after battling a host of illnesses that were simply too much for Bob to overcome. Bob Bupka was 83 when he took his final breath. But I have to tell you, folks, in those 83 years, did Bob Bupka ever get the most out of an extraordinary life filled with laughter and friendships and family and stories, all circled around the one subject that he reported on and loved so dearly, golf. So this episode of Musings on Golf, while sad in the ways it should be because our great friend is no longer with us, is also a celebration for those of us who knew Bob well and an opportunity to be able to convey to you, our loyal listeners, what made the big man with the big voice so special, so respected, and so loved. Two of Bob's great friends, PGA of America professional Bob Joyce and Adam Shupak, senior writer for GolfWeek.com, are joining me as we remember Bob Bupka, whose career spanned 6 decades. Mr. Joyce, your dear friend Bob Bupka had such a fondness and just great respect for the daily contributions of PGA golf professionals. But Bob, first and foremost, he was your dear friend for more than 50 years. This is a big loss, Bob, I know, to you personally and to the game.
Absolutely, Kelly. And I first met Bob my first year as the head professional at Southampton Golf Club out here in Southampton, New York, which is right next door to Shinnecock, where the Open will be next year. And it was 1969, and I just became the new head professional at the Southampton Golf Club. And within probably my one hour of my showing up, I opened the door, in walks this big, burly, 6'2" guy with bushy hair, and introducing himself as Bob Bupka. And he said, you know, I'll be here every day because I have a job that allows me to play afternoons. He said, I sell liquor in the morning. I do all my calls in the morning, and I can play every afternoon. I said, he said, I hope we can get a lot of games. So I said, Bob, this is my first year here. I have to pay attention to the shop. My golf game is going to be put on hold. But I intend to try to play Friday afternoons. If you're around, and I'll try to play with as many members as possible, but if you're around, I'll certainly play with you. Well, he was there at 12 o'clock and made sure he was the first on that list to play on Friday afternoons. Now Bob Bupka grew up in Sag Harbor, which is on the shoreline on the north side of the South Fork of of the East End. And the golf course that Bob Bupka grew up on was Sag Harbor Golf Club, a 9-hole golf course owned by the town of Sag Harbor. And the greens were sand greens. And when anyone who's listening, whoever played on sand greens, and out in the Southwest they had them, and over in Saudi Arabia they probably have them anyway, you had to rake the sand with an oil rake, and to get them smooth, and then you'd put your ball to the hole. Of course, by the time your ball got to the hole, it was solid black from the oil. But Bob Bupka had one of the best strokes you'd ever see, and he had this beat-up old bullseye with the grip unraveling at the end, and he can make everything, and he thought he could make everything. And when you think you can make everything, you're a great putter. But anyway, so we got to start playing on Friday afternoons, and he, like I said, he showed up. And my game was a little rusty. I wasn't working on it, but Bob was peaking. He was peaking for these games on Friday, and his game was sharp. In fact, 2 years later, he won the club championship at Southampton in 1972, beating a very, very good field. And that was probably his biggest accomplishment here. But anyway, Bob had afternoons off, and he got invited to several of the member guests, the invitationals in the area, at National Links, at Shinnecock, etc. And they would ask him, well, to back up a little bit, his parents owned a market, a deli market in Sag Harbor, and they gave him the concession to the ice machine. So he had an ice machine with people who come by when they need ice, they put their coins in and get the ice. So when he went to Shinnecock or National and met up with these highfalutin members who have CEOs at various corporations, they'd ask him, Bob, what do you do? He said, well, I can tell you, my assets are frozen, and I get to spend them every now and then, but they're frozen. Well, that's pretty good, Bob. Welcome to the member guests. Of course, he'd go out there and do his best. But anyway, we would play, and in the first year we were playing, he pretty much beat me about, I'd say, 6 times out of 10, okay? Then, as I moved into the season, I started to work on my game a little bit, and we started to get a little better. And we were only playing for $2 Nassau's, of course, but $2 back then was big. And just the fact that he can take $2 from the pro, and that his chest was out every time I paid him that $6 or $8, whatever it was. But anyway, we're playing one day, and now the rates have gone up. We're now playing a $10 closeout. And before we tee off, he says, and he's riding with me in the cart. He says, Bob, I don't have my 6-iron. I broke the shaft yesterday. They're repairing it. It wasn't ready. So I'm going now. I just want you to know I don't have a 6-iron. Oh, no problem, Bob. I never said he could use mine. But I said, no problem, Bob. So we go out and we play. We come to the 18th hole. And I hit my second shot on the green. And he goes, and he's about 30 yards away from me. And he hits his second shot on the green. He gets inside of me by about 2 feet. And this is it. Everything's resting on this last hole. I putt first. I miss the putt. I lip out. He puts next, and he makes it for birdie. Wins all the bucks. So we're going off the green. I said, Bob, great shot in there. What did you hit? He said, I hit a 6-iron. He said, Bob, you don't have a 6-iron. He said, well, I used yours. You used my 6-iron, Bob? Well, I'm sorry. You will not get the $10 you won. You just broke one of the major rules in golf. And he just was beside himself. He couldn't speak. He said, how could a friend do this to me? And I said, Bob, you call the USGA and find out about that rule. I am not paying you $10. Well, he wouldn't talk to me for 3 months. He didn't say a word. We never had a game for 3 months until he finally was exhausted and trying to forgive me. But anyway, he did, and we went forward. So anyway, that was one little short story of when I met Bob.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is just great stuff. And there were, you know, Bob made that impression on so many people. You talked about, him walking in, and Adam, you and Bob shared, space in many a media center covering our great game over the years. Bob, in fact, reported on more than 130 major golf championships. He obviously made a huge impression on you as well, Adam Shupak, both personally and professionally, right?
Indeed. I knew the voice before I knew the man. Yeah. So I'd already kind of grown up listening to him, and to get to meet him in those media centers was so cool, to just sit around and listen to him, kind of hold court and tell stories. And, he for whatever reason, he was a fan of mine. I don't know why, but, he kind of mentored me and looked after me and was there for me in the good times and the bad. And I the one thing that jumps to mind is when I was freelancing and kind of on my own and needed a little help, he reached out to me and said, I got space in our master's house. Do you want us to come stay with us? And, maybe we can talk about this now, but there was a like a sugar daddy who paid the majority of that rental rate. So it was this incredible, you know, to be that close to Augusta National and paying as little as he was charging me was really, you know, made a big difference to me and helped me. And he was just always there for me. I think about, there was a stint where I was the first golf writer for The Athletic. And it was just this kind of going to be this short term, let's try this out, see how it goes. They hadn't done anything with golf yet. They were still pretty new. And one tournament, I told him all about this. And as a show of support, he signed up for a subscription and, you know, put his money out there and was backing me. And it's like, I'm going to make sure you're going to do this for, you know, years and years. And well, it turned out, didn't last very long. I think I did like six events and then they were like, yeah, this golf, we're not so sure about golf. We'll get back to you. And so, Bob, you know, he was so great at, I think one of the things that made him so talented at radio was the way he made golfers feel comfortable. And he had a great way of just talking to them and setting them up, but he also had a great needle. And I remember him telling me, hey, I paid like 50, 60 bucks for this and I don't even get to read you. I got 6 weeks out of this. So that was just the way, you know, the rapport that we had back and forth. And, you know, I don't think there are going to be that many guys who do 130 majors anymore. It's just been a rough stretch between, you know, losing my colleagues, Jeff Babineau and Steve DiMeglio early and late last year. And then John Feinstein too. I mean, those are guys, they're not going to be people doing 130 majors the way Bob did. He's, you know, last of the Mohican type. And especially with radio, I mean, radio, there's still a place for it. I mean, I think people fell in love, you know, who don't listen to radio, loved listening to the British Open this past week. The Open on the radio is just outstanding. That's probably as good as it gets these days. But it's like a lost art. And Bob had an incredible talent and way with words and love for what he did and brought such a passion to golf coverage.
Well, and that's right. And all the way back to, I mean, he started at WLNG, the local station in Sag Harbor, where he grew up covering high school football, you know, in the early 60s. So he loved radio. I mean, he stayed with them for more than 50 years. Bob Joyce certainly is aware of that. Before we continue, I posted something the other day as a tribute to Bob on Facebook, and the outpouring of comments really, really, it was a bit overwhelming in a very special way. And I thought I would read a couple of them just to kind of expand upon what you talked about in terms of the mentoring and the friendship, but just the general nature of who Bob Bupka was. Now, Len Shapiro, a longtime columnist for the Washington Post, talked about my fellow Long Islander and all around great guy. He loved golf and the game will miss him terribly. Hank Gola, longtime writer for both the New York Post and New York Daily News. Hank has a terrific new book out on the Ryder Cup. And Hank talked about the fact that Bob loved the Open Championship. He said, I can remember him filling the media center with his booming voice when he posted his what turned out to be his final reports from the 2022 Open at St. Andrews. Jeff Root, longtime golf columnist at Golf Week and other publications. He said, rest in peace to a longtime friend. We had a lot of fun times together all over the country, all over the world. My heart aches. We lost a very good man. And then Ann LaGuori said something, longtime correspondent for WFAN in New York, their golf correspondent. She said something at the end of this, which I want to carry a little bit further. She said, I spent many majors broadcasting next to Bob. We were also friends from the east end of Long Island, and we have many stories and memories of fun times. Bob never took himself too seriously, and he lived life to the max. Bob Joyce, first of all, I think that's important to me, and I always felt that way about Mr. Bupka, that I think that was part of his charm, Bob Joyce. He never took himself too seriously. And that was, to me, a lot of the reason why he was so much darn fun to be around.
Absolutely, Kelly. And I'd like to just, Bob's enthusiasm for the game, for playing, for broadcasting it was unsurpassable. But anyway, I'll give you a little instance. So in 1973, the Oakmont is at, the U.S. Open is at Oakmont, Pennsylvania, and Bob was playing in the Long Island Amateur, qualifying for the Long Island Amateur here on Long Island. Now, like I said, he was a pretty good stick. He could play pretty good. Anyway, he shoots 77 or 78. And anyway, I get a call from him prior to that round that he is playing up at Nassau Country Club in the qualifying. But a friend of ours, a member of the club, George Ficano, is going to pick you up because my brother Mike and my brother Tom had both qualified for the U.S. Open in 1972. He says, you've got to come up and watch them play at least one round. I said, absolutely. Anyway, George Ficano picked me up, and we then picked up Bob Bupka. We drive on Wednesday early, pretty much early in the morning. We get there late in the afternoon in Oakmont, and we parked a car about, I'd say, 100, 150 yards from the putting green practice area. So anyway, we go to there, we get on the green, and I see my brother Mike, I see my brother Tom, and Tom is putting around, and he says, I'm having trouble with this putter of mine. He said, I wish I'd have brought my bullseye with me. So Bob says, wait a minute, bullseye, I've got one in my golf bag. And my brother Tom says, really? He said, yes, I'll go get it. My putter's going to be in the U.S. Open. So he runs. He takes off. I've never seen anyone run so fast, 150 yards to his car. He comes running back. He's all perspired. And he gives the putter to my brother Tom. My brother Tom takes about three or four putts with it. And he looks to Bob and he says, Bob, it's not going to do it. Here, take it back. And there was no one more depressed than Bob Bupka at the moment. He thought his putter, his bullseye putter would be in the U.S. Open. Anyway, that was just one of the stories. But anyway, there was so many stories about Bob, and I'm sure Adam and you on Mondays or Tuesdays on the tournament sites way back, and Janice Self was his partner. And a wonderful person has kept Bob alive for probably the last 10 years with her attention to him. And she was not only his partner, she was the technology with his broadcasting. He could not have done what he did all those years without Janice Self, who was a great golfer herself. But on Mondays, a foursome would be Alex Maselli, Bob Bupka, Janice Self, and he would call me to come in as the fourth. And that happened pretty much in those tournaments in Florida when I was down there or up here or whatever. Anyway, when Alex Maselli and Bob Bupka got to bang heads, there was no holds barred. You talk about the needle. Well, Alex could give it as good as anyone, and Bob could back that up.
Well, and Alex, Adam, as you well know, Alex, having been with Golf Channel and Golf Week, many different publications, really highly respected guy. Over the years as both a writer and a commentator on the game. Let me know, Hank Gola, in what he posted on my Facebook page, talked about Bob's booming voice at the Open Championship and just his booming voice in general. Adam Shupak, Bupka really was the voice of golf.
Indeed. I mean, the way, we love that voice, and we say it was the voice of golf, but he was, it was a voice made for radio. It was also a joke of face made for radio.
Yeah.
But we'd have fun with that. But he was so good at that. When I think of some of the stories that he would tell sitting around at the media center, one of his real claims to fame, and you feel free to throw in some of the details, because I'm sure you've heard this too, Kelly, but he was the first one to interview Jack Nicklaus.
Yes, he was
at the 1986 Masters. That was just an incredible story, and really, like, to be able to say the first person to talk to him after what Jack did at age 46 and went in that 18th major. He was there. You talk about 130 majors. Like, that's got to be, I don't know if that was his all time favorite, but that's got to be up there, because he would talk about that opportunity and being the one to get the to talk to Jack in that moment. That's pretty unique. And I don't know how that would even happen today with with the way things are structured now, but he got that opportunity. Really cool stuff. And he did so many things like that. And then to think that years later had such a friendship with Jack. I was looking back at some of my texts with him the other day and thinking about him. And one of them was about him getting to see be at the Big Four press conference in Houston at the Insperity. And how he said, Jack gave me some special time. I got some one-on-one time with Jack. And Jack always had a special place in his heart for Bob. You know, I know when Bob went back to that 2022 Open Championship at St. Andrews, his last trip over there for the major he loved, part of the reason he went was because Jack included him in this great moment that he had where Jack was being celebrated by the city as a citizen of St. Andrews, and he wanted Bob to be there, and so Bob made the journey, even though you know even then he wasn't in great health. But that you know I'm trying to think of what player would ever want me to be you know involved in that these days. It's just he had a special relationship with players like him. Even Tiger came over to say hello to him at that British Open, and they always had a good relationship, which you know not a lot of people can say that anymore. Right. So you know he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing with the players. He had a great rapport, and the people, his listeners, loved to hear that booming voice.
No question about it. And let me take what you said a little step further. Reached out to Mr. Nicklaus, and he was nice enough to write back. And I was going to say this, read this a little bit later, but the timing is good now. So this is from Jack Nicklaus in regards to Bob Bupka. Bupka was a good friend to golf and a good friend to me for many years. I can't tell you how far back we go, but any time I ever finished a tournament or event or did anything of any significance, Bob was always there to talk about what went on and how it happened. Bob was always very insightful with his questions. Bob had a big voice. He had a big personality that came with a wonderful sense of humor, and he had a big heart. I will never forget that Bob, along with Janice, took the time to be there in Scotland 3 years ago this month to support me when I received an honorary citizenship to St. Andrews. Bob was a great guy, and the sports world will miss him, as will Barbara and I. Fantastic words, right? And as you said, Adam, a rarity that the player of any sport to a media member to have that connection, right?
Very special, very special.
Bob Bupka was with PGA Tour Network and Westwood One for many years. You would hear Bob updates on weekend if you were listening to golf tournaments, giving you updates from major golf championships. Tiger Woods just made this putt to take the lead in the third round at Winged Foot, et cetera. And then he landed the opportunity with TalkSport in the UK. TalkSport is recognized as the world's biggest radio station. Let's hear what Bob Bupka had to say about that opportunity to have that voice of golf go worldwide.
Well, it's the largest sports radio station, and they apparently got a listen somewhere, and they said, would you like to be our golf guy? And I said, certainly, and it was supposedly for that season. Well, this year now marks 20 years of doing it. The downside, as I get a little older, gets a little tougher because they feature me on the breakfast show. Just last night, I had to do a report for this morning's breakfast show. That meant at 12:30 in the morning, my time, for their 6:30 in the morning in London. But it's been a big thrill. They have in excess of 3 million listeners on any given broadcast, and just have grown to love TalkSport. And obviously, I'm fooling them pretty good because they've kept me for 20 years.
Yeah, and guys, you know, when Bob passed, TalkSport had just a beautiful tribute to him. Rupert Bell, who you heard earlier, and you're going to hear Rupert later on in this podcast. Bob was authentic and that voice, yes. But Bob loved the game, and that really, really was something that carried over to the listeners, whether here in the States or in the UK. And I think that was always the great thing. His love for the game was, I don't know if it was unequaled, but it was certainly very high up there. And Bob Joyce, the fact that he was such a good player, I think that sometimes people love the game, but they may not be the best player. He combined both of those elements, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, Kelly. And when you talk about relationships, and Bob had a wonderful relationship with all the players, especially those who won events. And it reminds me of his relationship with a mutual friend of ours, Sonny Rhodes from Austin, Texas. And through Sonny Rhodes, Bob got to meet Harvey Penick, and Harvey Penick was Sonny's coach at the University of Texas. And actually, Sonny, along with Ben Crenshaw and Tom Kite and a couple others, were Harvey's pallbearers at his funeral when he died, I think, in 1993. But his relationship with Ben Crenshaw was special as well. When Ben won that historic Masters, the very historic and most emotional Masters probably ever televised, Bob was the first to interview Ben as he walked off the green at Augusta National. And he had a very short, maybe a 2 or 3 minute interview, and this and that. Of course, Ben talked mostly about Harvey and how Harvey was his 15th club in the bag. And by the end of the interview, Ben was in tears, and so was Bob Bupka. So anyway, Sonny Rhodes was a catalyst to bringing us together. And Sonny and Bob and myself had many, many wonderful times together. We went to the Ryder Cup in Spain with Sonny. We played golf at the various places. But anyway, that was just a great relationship that anyone would love to have. And you talk about 1986. Well, Bob's first broadcast of a U.S. Open was out of the WLNG van, which somehow they were able to get it parked 50 yards from the practice tee. And Bob was there from day one, Monday till Tuesday, right till Sunday, all day broadcasting and interviewing players. And the USGA was so happy with what he was doing, because on Sunday, the end of the tournament, this was the first event that the USGA took control of the tournament. In the
Yes.
past, the merchandising, et cetera, was done by the club, and usually the Hales professional would have the concession that week. But this time, the USGA purchased the rights to totally control the Open, so they did the merchandising. And of course, on Sunday, probably 75% of the merchandise is sold. But what they decided to do is to hold over any merchandise to Monday. Now, Bob, on his broadcast, sent out, and this WLNG is heard throughout Long Island and Connecticut, and a huge audience, a big audience. So he, on his broadcast from Saturday and Sunday, he reminded the listener that the U.S. Open merchandise tent will be open on Monday mornings to sell at a huge discount all the merchandise left over in the tent. Well, that particular day, when Monday came along, they were inundated. They sold every last item from the tent. And I know the USGA was very happy about that. And the other thing that Bob did for the USGA during that first, was that was the second US Open held at Shinnecock, was that he had WLNG traffic reports coming in every half hour. So he would broadcast the traffic reports, what was going on in the East End. So it really made the navigation of anyone trying to get to the tournament or from the tournament or get past the event on the highway was extremely helpful to the traffic situation at that time. So everyone, it was a win-win situation, and Bob did a unbelievable job out of that van at the U.S. Open 1986 at Shinnecock, which was won by our great Raymond Floyd, who also had a nice relationship with Bob.
Great way to put it. It was a win-win, right? And so Bob Bupka took advantage of that opportunity and really shined. I mean, he, as you said, interviewing players during the week, it was. Can you imagine today having a van that close to the, to, you know, you know, at a U.S. Open? But that was a great start. He was a pioneer in a sense, and bringing those players in for interviews. I want to play. You mentioned about the. With Ben Crenshaw and the emotions with Harvey Pinnock in 1995, you touched on a lot of those things. Let's hear what Mr. Bupka had to say about not only that moment, but what then happened later with something that Ben did.
Bob, as you well know, the Masters is such an emotional event on so many levels. As a grizzled media veteran, when you have a story like that of a highly charged champion coming off of the emotions of putting his friend and mentor to rest just days before. Can you stay clear of getting caught up in the emotion and doing your job? I would imagine that can be a challenge at times.
Well, it was a challenge then because, as I alluded to, the friendship I had with Harvey and knowing full well how Ben felt about Harvey, yeah. And Ben was being escorted up to Butler Cabin, and I managed to get alongside of him. He knew me pretty well by then, so he was very accommodating. And the key question that I popped to Ben, I said, how much did Harvey play in this victory? And Ben just blurted out, he said, Harvey was the 15th club in my bag. Now, when he got into the media room later on, he used that quote over and over and over. It literally went around the world. And later on that week, well, actually early the following week, I got the nicest letter from Ben Crenshaw saying, Dear Bob, thanks for asking that question. I was able to sum up how I felt about Harvey because in Ben's eyes and heart and soul, Harvey certainly was the 15th club in his bag.
What a great story. I want to talk a little bit for a minute about the relationship that I had with Bob Bupka. I met Bob and Jana Self, who is our executive producer, and without Bob Joyce, as you said earlier, without Jana Self, my dear friend, none of this gets out. She is the best at what she does. I met them many years ago working for the PGA of America as their director of communications and at media centers, whether at the PGA Championship or the Ryder Cup. Couldn't have been nicer to me. And then a few years ago, I was posting something on my Facebook page called My Monday Musings, which was kind of a takeoff of what Larry King used to do in the life section of USA Today for years, just little snippets. And, you know, Larry would say, if it's vanilla ice cream, give me two scoops type of thing. And I just decided I did little snippets like that, having to do with golf and sports, and had fun with it. I would expand upon certain items as they, you know, whatever the news or of the day or week may be. Bob called me one day and he said, "Hey, Kel," he said, "how about if we take what you're doing with these musings? How about if we expand them into a podcast?" He said, "I think we can have a lot of fun with this. I think we can be good at it." And did we ever? And we started with something called Musings on Sports. Our very first guest was the great Jim Nantz. And obviously, anytime you get Jim Nantz as your first guest on anything, it gives you some credibility right away. And then over time, we morphed into Musings on Golf for logical reasons. We're both golf guys. We know the people. And it was, frankly, easier to get a lot of guests and great guests that we had in more than 150 episodes. And we're going to continue with Musings on Golf, but it came down to just a focus on storytelling. And Adam, you know, that storytelling angle, that's what you thrive on as a great reporter, right? Any kind of human interest story and being able to ask the questions and let people tell their stories and your ability to write, that ability to tell stories, I think is always something that attracts people as readers, as listeners. To me, it's the very heart of what sports is all about, the people and their stories.
For sure. And I think radio is probably the toughest medium, and especially with golf, to tell stories about golf through just the word it's a challenge to tell, to paint that picture. And one of the things I just admired so much about Bob is, as I mentioned earlier, staying at a house with him at Augusta for the Masters in Augusta. He would, as he talked a little bit about when he working for Talksport, he'd be up crazy hours. I mean, I'd go to bed and he would be just starting, and I'd wake up and he'd still be going over the all night long. He and Janice doing these updates. My wife and I, we always do tell this funny story. When we think about those times, he it must have been just 6 a.m. and he'd been doing it for 10 hours already, but he kept saying Eduardo Molinari has shot six, and Kristen kept going, it's Francesco Molinari, not Eduardo. We always joke about that,
Oh, that's funny.
but he loved it. And there, there's a great obit that Talksport put together because Bob meant so much to him. And Sean O'Brien from Talksport tells the story in that obit about how, he said to Bob, why are you still doing this? Why aren't you at the beach? You could be at the beach every day, spending, you've had this great career. You don't have to keep doing this. And Bob's answer really, to me, just sums up how much he loved what he did. And he said, "But Sean, this is my beach." And that to me, and it just encapsulates Bob Boepka and what he loved about the passion that he had for golf and radio and storytelling, better than anything I've heard so far.
So pleased to be joined by Adam Shupak of GolfWeek.com and PGA of America professional Bob Joyce as we celebrate the terrific life of our dear friend Bob Boepka. Adam, we talked earlier about the unusual relationship that Bob had with Jack in a very, very good way. And he did also have very much of a warm relationship with Tiger. A couple of bits here that I want to play. The first had to do with that 1997 Masters, which turned out to be record-setting in so many ways. But based on what Bob said, as you'll hear, at least the first nine holes were not exactly what those who were talking about this great Tiger Woods had in mind. Obviously, everything changed after those first nine holes in 97.
What was amazing about that week, Tiger opened up on Thursday with an opening nine of 40, and all the doubting Toms that were in the media center saying, "See, we knew it would be this way when he got to play with the big boys." And they thought that maybe at that juncture, Tiger was a little bit of a fluke, and certainly he turned things around and wins by 12 shots, proving ultimately the furthest thing from a fluke, maybe the most real deal ever to play the game.
And then, as Bob and I co-hosted Musings on Golf, and he would share stories, there were two that stood out. I know for Bob, receiving an 80th birthday card from Jack Nicklaus was an absolute prized possession, something that meant the world to him. And it came off of the time that the two of them spent when Jack was honored in St. Andrews. The second one that he loved to tell, which is much funnier, had to do with Tiger's event out in California one year, and Bob wasn't there. And let's hear what Bob has to say from there.
And you've developed a nice friendship in a casual way with him over the years, haven't you?
I really have. And one story I love to share, Kel, is he held a tournament out in Sherwood in California, and we used to go every year. And this one year, I had to be in the hospital in New York just for some routine tests, nothing serious. But Janice went to the event, and Janice is out there, and along comes Tiger. And Tiger says, "Where's Bob, Janice?" And Janice said, "Well, he couldn't make it this year. He's in the hospital. He's having some routine tests being conducted. But, he's absolutely fine." Tiger said, "Get him on the phone." And I'm laying in a hospital bed in New York. The phone rings. I say, hello. And I hear, how you doing, man? I said, who's this? He said, come on, how you doing, man? I said, good golly, who is this? He said, Bob, it's Tiger. I said, Tiger? I said, you trying to give me a heart attack? And he said, no, I just wanted to see how you were doing. And I said, well, I really appreciate it. So I hang up and I say to the nurse, you're not going to believe this. That was Tiger Woods calling to see how I'm doing. She leaves the room immediately. Within a minute, in comes a doctor. And he said, Mr. Bubka, the nurse thinks you may be a little bit delusional. I'm going to have to check you over.
Some guy, you thinking Tiger Woods is calling you. That's what they're hearing, huh?
they refuse to believe it. Quite honestly, about an hour after the phone call, I said, did I hallucinate? Maybe I did. Could it have been Tiger calling me? But he was good. He was good to our executive producer, Janice Self, and always good to me. I've been at all 15 of his majors. You know, you kind of build up a relationship when you're out there. I never did anything negative about Tiger. Any of my reports always were positive, which is pretty easy to be positive when you're talking about Tiger Woods, that's for sure.
And Adam, you know, you mentioned about, you know, Bob and holding court and so forth. It's ironic and sad at the same time that as much as Bob loved the Open Championship and that opportunity to, you know, to spin a good yarn and so forth, his passing coincided with the third round of the Open Championship and how much he loved St. Andrews. I know he would have loved to have been there. You were there, obviously, in Northern Ireland at Royal Portrush over the weekend. There is something special about the Open Championship, and Bob was just a natural fit for the oldest championship in golf.
Yeah, I as you said, I was there, and it was in the media center, in the press, right before the press conference that for Scottie Scheffler winning. I looked on my phone on Facebook. I had this quick moment before Scottie was coming in. He was a minute or two late, and that's where I saw the news, and it just hit me like a cold bucket of water. And boy, it was tough to write my game, my story after that, because I was pretty devastated. You know, I look back, as I mentioned earlier, on my phone, my last text to him was on his birthday on June 28th. Yeah. I knew he wasn't doing great. So I'd, you know, been in touch a bit over the last couple months, something I wasn't able to do with a friend like Jeff Babineau. I wasn't ready. You know, we never are, I guess. But, you know, he meant so much to me. I know he loved the Open. I think I was writing about this, writing some stuff about him today, I was thinking about how much he would have loved to see the Ryder Cup at Bethpage later this year. He loved the Ryder Cup. He wrote a book about the Ryder Cup. I was looking back at some of those texts, and there was a photo that I sent him of from the old gallery in Pinehurst, and our books were next to each other for sale. And we had a chuckle about that, but you know, he just did so many things. I think he would have loved that. And then as Bob Joyce mentioned, I think next year, Shinnecock hosting the 26 US Open, he would have found a way to be there one way or the other. That would have been a homecoming for him. And he leaves a big hole in the game because he knew everybody. The Rolodex that the two of you had for the Musing show, you know, starting out when it was, you'd have guys like Steve Spurrier and Archie Manning and Rick Barry. I mean, you guys knew everybody. And then I think I'm probably the least famous person you had on the Musings on Golf show. It's just a who's who in the golf industry that has participated. And, you know, the fact that he wasn't on the most recent episode with Lee Trevino hinted to me that he wasn't doing good and had me a little worried. But, you know, I think, you know, Kelly, I think doing that show for the last bunch of years kept him alive for a while because he loved doing that. And you know, he was one of those guys that just loved, you know, it was his beach, and he wanted to keep doing it for as long as he could. And I think that that the fact that you guys did that show was huge for him, and he loved every minute of it.
Yeah, he did. You're absolutely right. I think it was great for him. You know, sort of it kept him in the game, if you will. And, yeah. and you know, to be able to share those stories, right? And Bob Joyce, you know, let me, as we kind of close here, and I'm so touched with your comments there. They're just beautiful and so appropriate. Bob Joyce, what do we talk when we talk about a legacy for Bob Bupp, great people? And the great people, heck, my father, Max Elvin, at Burning Tree Club for 50 years, president of the PGA of America, the people that he met, the people that I've gotten to know in large part because of that. Bob Joyce, what's the legacy of Bob Bupka, your friend, on a personal level, and then in terms of what he meant to so many people whose lives he touched through his voice and his love for the game of golf?
Well, I have an interesting story going back some time, a while back when the U.S. Open was held out here at Bethpage, exactly the same black course that they're playing the Ryder Cup on in September of this year. And Kyle Rhodes, Sonny Rhodes' son, sent a little note out yesterday, and he reminded us of prediction that. And on Tuesday, he was interviewing players on the range, just basically informally, and he ran into Lucas Glover, and Lucas Glover's caddy was there too, and Bob was talking informally to Lucas, and his caddy was there, and they were talking, and his caddy mentioned Lucas loves this golf course, and Lucas he is on top of his game right now. And Lucas looked at Bob and the caddy, and he kind of nodded, yeah, I guess I am, and I'll give it my best this week. But anyway, Bob had a broadcast on Talk Sports coming up, and that was on Wednesday, the day before the Open. And the fellow broadcaster on Talk Sports asked Bob, he said, well, Bob, I know you're there at Bethpage, and I know you love the golf course and you love the tournament. Do you have a prediction? And so Bob said, you know, I don't usually make predictions, but this year I'm going to make a prediction. And I'm calling Lucas Glover as the U.S. Open champion of this year's Bethpage Black. Well, that went out all over London and England and Ireland. And the betting on Lucas Glover that week pretty much broke the bookmakers in those stables. And that was the last time Bob made a prediction on the U.S. Open, at any tournament. He said, "Listen, I'm going down one for one. I'm not going to put myself out again." But anyway, getting back to Bob, there's a tear in my eye and a hole in my heart when I hear his voice because I've known it for some 55 years. But anyway, I have mentioned to the PGA of America and the tour and that there's an award out there that recognizes broadcasters and writers. And I've asked them that if they would consider Bob's name, because no one is more qualified than Bob Bupka as far as broadcasting golf over the radio. And he was doing it for some 40 years. And I think he's a most worthy candidate for that award. And I hope some of those associations will acknowledge that and possibly put him up or nominate him for one of those media awards.
So glad to hear you say that, Bob Joyce. And yes, I couldn't agree with you more. And from a legacy standpoint, what a thing that would be to have an award named for Bob that would be in perpetuity and be recognized for the excellence, that Bob stood for so long. Adam, I know you have some a great story to close out and some thoughts about Bob and maybe a pay it forward type of thing.
I got one more good Bupka story. One time we were sitting around and we were talking about the Masters and Augusta National, and he said, "You've played, right, Adam?" And I'm actually 0 for forever in the Masters lottery. And he told me about the first time he played there. I think it might have been around 1981 or so. I don't remember the details of this exactly, but he told me how back in that era, in that day, all you had to do was sign up. There was no lottery. You just put your name on a list. I think there might have been 16 or 20 slots, maybe around that number. But he told me how he slept in his car outside the gates of Augusta National the night before, Saturday night, I think it was, and was the first guy into Augusta National when that gate opened and was the first person to put his name on the list. And I mean, there's just a million stories of that Bubka has. We could, there should be a book really of all these stories. And when I think about, I said in the beginning, I'm not sure why he picked me out to someone he wanted to be friends with, but thinking a little bit about it, I do think he maybe saw a little bit of himself in me, the passion for the game. And so it's really cool. You don't have that many people that root for you the way he rooted for me, in this business. It was really special. And when I think about going forward, I'm going to try to carry that torch as I think I have so far, carry the way that the devotion that he had to doing the job and loving it and just being there. And maybe I'll chase that 130 major championships mark that he set.
Guys, I can't thank you enough for being here with us, and just the emotion from both of you, and the friendship, the deep friendship that both of you had for Bob, and for so long, and it shows me, Bob Joyce, I mentioned about his love for PGA of America professionals, and that relationship you had with him, I think is such a reflection of that, and Adam, his feelings for so many in the media and the individuals that he mentored, like you, and befriended, and just was kind to, and was offering to help in whatever way he possibly could. I think that meant so much and spoke so much to who Bob was. As for me, as Adam said, it's a deep loss because Bob was not just my broadcast partner or my podcast partner. He was a dear friend. And he, the opportunity, yes, for Bob every week to be able to do musings on golf, did that keep him going in a way? Well, yeah, I guess it probably did. Yeah. But you know what? The only reason that musings on golf even started and musings on sports be before that was because of Bob Bupka. He was the one who said to me, as I mentioned earlier, "Hey, Cal, do this. Let's have some fun with it. We could be good at it. We could tell some great stories. We could get some great guests." And along the way, man, we had so much fun and so many great stories. And so I will miss him. I will miss him dearly, and I will think of Bob often, with a smile, and of that booming voice, and the way he carried himself, and the work ethic, and the times that he put in those media centers and late night working and reporting for TalkSport. So as we close, just as we opened, I thought Rupert Bell at the outset really set the stage for this tribute to Bob. And so Janice Self, my dear friend who I love deeply, who's been producing this podcast and did all the work with her longtime partner, Bob Bupka. I'm going to ask her to I'll turn it over to her to hit the right buttons. And let's hear what Rupert has to say as we close out this, what I think has been a lovely tribute to Bob. And again, guys, thank you very much for being a part of this. And let's let Rupert Bell of TalkSport have the final words on our dear friend, Bob Bupka.
And now a moment that'll go down in history. Tiger Woods wins the 2019 Masters, and is he elated? This is an epic victory that will not be forgotten.
In later years, Bob's health made it difficult to travel, and his last Open in situ was at St Andrews in 2021. He loved being there, and the relish which he drove his motorized wheelchair around the city was fantastic. But what he also loved was the interaction with TalkSport listeners. And I know in the end, being part of the TalkSport family was so important to him as he struggled with ill health. But even when physically frail, That voice never faltered. Covering the majors will never be the same without that extraordinary voice drawing us in to the magnificent sport of golf. Bob, we'll miss you.